Hello, everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 108 for February 18th. Chance Watson and Molly Roberts.
Hello.
Bring you the news today. This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They're the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Molly, with one of our former hosts, who's now down in Boise, betrayed us for broadcast news. She's in front of the camera now. Yeah.
Yep.
She timed me once on saying that as fast as I could.
Yeah.
24 seconds.
Dang.
It wasn't bad. I'm fairly certain that nobody understood what I was saying.
Right.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Molly, I have a few questions for you today.
Okay.
First off. The Winter Olympics is currently happening, and I want to ask, why should we care?
I feel like you are asking the absolute wrong person, because my first thought was, I mean, okay, it is cool, and especially the Winter Olympics. I do like watching, like the ice skating. I like watching, and
okay,
like, so I don't know. Yeah, as someone who's not super into sports, I guess.
What do you, the casual part-time
viewer of
yes,
when I see it when I'm working at radio,
what value do you get out of it?
For me, entertainment value is more, I feel like, than anything.
It's more of like follow my logic on this. There are some times where it's on randomly at a place that I walk into, and there's that obscure sport that I find interesting.
Yes.
It's so, like, I can never remember for the life of me what it is called, but it's the one where they like ski and shoot rifles.
Do you know what
I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, it's like multi-purpose. Like,
right.
There's like several different, like, they could each be individual sports. But like they ski
them all together.
And then it's probably something from like, you know, like a Denmark or Finland sport where they actually have like military troops that do that or something.
True, that would make sense. Yeah. Like a training exercise.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yeah. Probably then born into that.
Uh-huh.
But I find that interesting.
Yeah.
The bobsled.
Mm-hmm.
That's always fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's fun to watch. It's entertaining to watch. I guess. I definitely have my issues with it, though, especially now, like, we're getting the stuff out about these, like, 16-year-old girls that are being forced to take drugs, and, like, the pressure that's put on these young Olympic athletes
to be good at one thing every 4 years.
That's not going to last their whole lives. There's always going to be someone new after them. Like, that part is so harmful.
Yep.
And just sort of sours the whole thing for me, I feel like.
I can get into it in a short-term thing.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Like, you get the gold, and then you're good.
Yep.
But, like, I mean, if you're in it's like the ultimate, like, you're practicing every day for, like, one game.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that's just mentally draining.
It has to be, just exactly. And then what do you do for the rest of your life? Like,
continue the cycle and teach someone else to do it.
The next person. Yeah, that's so true.
The cycle repeats.
Olympics.
go Olympics. It also, I do find it funny, like, you know, because there are certain years where it's held in certain countries that don't have the greatest track record when it comes to amenities and I don't know, human rights violations.
Yeah.
Anyway, so China, and then, like, there was that one year was in Russia where they were, like, painting the grass green. Olympic, like, I love the idea in theory. I love the idea of, like, being truly the best, like, in the world at something.
Mm-hmm.
That is
everyone coming together.
Right. I truly love that idea. But more often than not, like, there's always, like, asterisks to stuff. Like, for this year, for example, I know you're not a hockey fan, but, like, they didn't send the pros this year.
Okay.
Like, the true pros, that, like, the best of the best, are not currently at the Olympics.
Huh.
So
right,
it so takes a lot like away it, from it.
Yes.
Yeah, it takes a lot away from it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Hey, speaking of continuing the cycle, a show that is very close to both of our hearts mm-hmm. has been renewed.
Yes, it has.
what were your initial thoughts and feelings of the news that Futurama has been renewed?
I mean, at first,
as someone who has a sticker of Bender.
A Bender on the back of my car, yes. I need to get a new one. He's starting to fade a little bit from the snow. I mean, first, anytime you see something, anytime I guess, see something that's getting renewed, my first reaction is kind of excitement. Like, okay, all right, let's see what's going to happen. But then as more and more gets released, that's when I start to be like, okay, gosh dang it. Because, yeah, the actor who plays Bender, whose voice acts as Bender.
I actually looked him up before. John DiMaggio.
John DiMaggio mm-hmm. will not, as far as right now.
Not yet. He's wanting to pay out.
Exactly.
He wants some money.
So, which is understandable.
I mean, I don't know what they've offered him currently.
I don't know. Yeah.
So I can't be sitting here, you know, like, I mean, he is a vital part of the show.
He is.
He's one of the three main casts.
Exactly.
You know?
And that voice, yeah, is
oh.
It needs to be him. Like,
it has to be him. There's no way you can change it. I mean, in the show, they could easily change it by, like, Bender got a new voice processor
course,
or something.
Of course, but everyone but would everybody be so wants, pissed about
right.
it. Yeah, yeah.
Unless you replaced it with another iconic voice.
True.
But
that's true.
Like
William
if,
Shatner. Is
or Patrick Stewart comes
yeah.
on.
Okay, that I would maybe be okay with.
We'll back, baby. You're like, whoa.
Like, okay,
I don't know how to process this.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, part of me is always also sort of like, just let's leave things alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand.
Mm-hmm. It's the but this is the show that refuses to die.
Oh, that's so
how many
true.
Times has it been canceled
and
or ended? Like,
back.
It just ran, you know, ran out of time. Like, it they had one more season and then
mm-hmm.
they were done and then they brought it back and
exactly.
The
so
show refuses to go down.
That's true. Which, okay.
Have you watched the, like, I would guess the pseudo, like, spiritual spinoff of Futurama, Disenchantment?
I have.
What do you think
yes.
about that?
I liked it. I liked it. I mean, I think a lot of people wanted it to be
Futurama.
So much. Exactly. That's what people went into it. They wanted it to be Futurama, and so then they were slightly disappointed.
I
liked it, too.
I didn't go in.
I was like, no, this is a completely different show. Yes, same creators, same sort of style.
The
but
humor. But the humor is there, and
I
love
is.
That.
It is. The humor's
yeah.
there. The story's there. Yeah, I enjoyed Disenchantment a lot.
Definitely pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at John DiMaggio's voice acting career.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely no, like, in-person stuff. He's not one of those guys that can also be in, like, you know, live-action stuff.
Okay, yeah.
He doesn't have anything in that, really. But he's done some – he's in Madagascar.
Oh.
Penguins the movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of my classic, a classic, like the classic anime movie, Princess Mononoke.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that one. And then TV shows. Like, I mean, obviously everybody knows Adventure Time, Inside Job, another show on Netflix, animated show.
Mm-hmm.
For those millennials out there, kids, Teen Titans.
Ooh, he was on Gravity Falls.
Yeah. So he's got a
he
little
does.
Bit. He's a little. He's got some background. He's definitely an experienced, voice actor for sure. So
he
okay,
is.
Maybe
like,
maybe
he is
demanding
yeah.
some. You know, he's got the track record.
He does to be able to say like, hey, I deserve some self respect. I deserve to be paid what I'm owed.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Like,
voice acting is not, and it's a hard job to, like, go in and be like, okay, you have to say it this way, even though you're not there.
Right.
You know, you're not in the situation.
That's
you're
true.
Doing something
yeah.
that you could probably never replicate ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have to, like, okay, I need you to act like you're about to be crushed by a rocket ship.
Right.
And
exactly.
Like, okay. How would I possibly, where's my
how
basis
am I
of
going
comparison
to, exactly.
for this?
Yeah. You are a robot who is about to be crushed by a spaceship.
Right.
Oh.
All right. Let me get into the headspace about that.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that is – people don't understand how difficult it is. You think you just go in and just kind of talk, but no, it's a lot more – difficult than
he was
that.
He Kim Possible. So what – did you watch some Kim Possible?
I loved Kim Possible, of course.
Oh, were you a Disney Channel –
Kind of was. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you had to choose between Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, or Cartoon Network.
Actually,
am I missing anything else? Maybe some PBS in there?
Ooh, now when I was younger, PBS, definitely.
Oh, sure. I got down on some Arthur.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Arthur. I had like multiple Arthur-themed birthday parties growing up. Loved Arthur. Probably I'd have to say Cartoon Network because there's like Powerpuff Girls, mm-hmm. Ed, Edd n Eddy, Dexter's Lab. Mm-hmm. All of those were so good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, also, I mean, Disney, we had Lizzie McGuire.
Sure.
We had... That's So Raven.
That's So Raven, yeah.
Oh, man.
I always forget that. I always, for some reason, because didn't Nickelodeon do, like, a weird spinoff? Or not a spinoff, but, like, basically their version of That's So Raven?
I think so.
I can't remember what it was called. But Nickelodeon did that. Well, both networks did that all the time.
They did.
Like, they would do their own, because then, like...
oh, this is successful.
Yeah, this is doing quite well.
Let's try it. Exactly, yeah.
Drake and Josh.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That was a solid one on Nickelodeon.
It was a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm. God, poor Drake Bell.
Yeah.
Kind of fell off the map a little bit. Josh Peck's doing
Josh
quite well,
Peck's
though.
Doing really well.
He's doing really well.
He's crushing it.
What was he in? He was in something recently. Oh, something really good. Can't remember.
Boy, yeah, he's done a lot of, like, YouTube and
stuff,
too.
Yeah. Turner and Hooch, that was what he was in the spinoff Turner and Hooch. The original one was Tom Hanks.
It's Tom Hanks, yeah.
Boy, that's a callback. That's a good movie, though. Did you ever see the original Turner and Hooch?
I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, it was a while ago.
It's a movie. Oh, yeah. It's a movie. Oh, he's also in How I Met Your Father, the spinoff of How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, I can't
Your face right there when I mentioned How I Met Your Father was just utter disgust.
It's another, like, let's just leave it. Let's just, like, I do really like Hilary Duff. I think she's beautiful. I think she's a great actress. But it just feels exhausting sometimes when it's like, really?
Make something new? Have we truly
new.
Run out of ideas?
Exactly. Like, we can still use that idea, I guess, but, like, I don't know, try and make it something new, because it does, it just, I feel like when I see it on Hulu, I just get exhausted.
I am going to tell you right now, well, because I watched the very first episode.
Yeah.
The intro into, like, setting the stage here,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, like, older Hilary Duff comes on and explaining to her kid how she met her father.
Right.
It is very uncomfortable. Like, it's like a drunk single mom having a wine night,
uh-huh.
calling up her son and saying, I'm going to explain to you how you were born.
Oh.
It is very strange.
Yeah, I don't love that.
And it's very clumsy.
Uh-huh.
But that being said, I didn't hate the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't feel forced. There was definitely some decent writing in there. There's a lot of old sitcom cliches. Like,
okay.
A lot of it centers around a bar again.
Sure.
Which, I mean, you know, a cheesy laugh track sitcom can't be complete without a bar.
Exactly.
Where everybody goes
bar,
to.
Yep.
Where, mm-hmm. Whether it be, you know, I think that goes probably all the way back to Cheers.
I think so.
Where that was perfected.
Yep, everyone knows your name.
That
uh-huh.
is very accurate. But yeah, it wasn't, I'll put it this way. I haven't watched past the first episode, so it wasn't good enough for me to, like,
to be like,
wait
with
bated breath and say, like, oh, new episode's out. I'm going
to
watch this. So it wasn't that good, but it might be something that I go back to.
Sure.
Like, I'll go back and check it out again.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where
episodes are out.
It'll be one of those things where I wait till all the episodes are out.
Exactly.
And then maybe I'll binge it.
See, like, how the reviews are, see if people are saying it's worth it, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I might do that. That sounds good. But Hulu seems like it's really stepping up its game with all of its exclusives and all that kind
of
stuff.
I agree. I do agree. I just saw The Kingsman on there, like the new Kingsman movie.
Yes.
And I was like, is this like an HBO Max? No, it was Hulu.
Nope, it's Hulu.
I was like, dang, Hulu.
Yeah,
all
they're
right,
picking up up some good stuff.
And they really are.
I think, especially with the, well, we were mentioned Futurama. I believe it's a Hulu exclusive.
Okay.
It's not like rebooted like for cable or something.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's
because Disenchantment was on Netflix.
It is on Netflix.
Okay.
Yes. So same people, but
yeah,
it's like it's like the Rick and Morty spinoff on Hulu.
Right.
What is that? Something Worlds or something.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Another thing.
I watched it.
Another show. Oh, if it's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
No, no. No,
I don't hate it. It's yeah. not bad. If it's from the creators of Rick and Morty.
Yes. Kind of yeah.
That makes any sense. Okay. We've rambled enough about,
about
our favorite shows and our
distaste for some shows.
And our distaste for Olympics. And I really hope that there's not like hardcore Olympic fans.
You know what? If you guys like the Olympics, that's cool. Love the Olympics. Sure. It's not for me.
I've never, okay, I can say this with confidence. I've never met a full-blown like Olympics fan in my life.
That's true.
I have met people that absolutely go bonkers for a specific sport.
Right.
Like they'll be like, team. I'm all about the volleyball team right now. I'm following those games and everything.
Yeah.
But like I've never like ran into somebody in my life that's like, man, the Olympics are on today. Like what?
Right.
I can't wait to watch fencing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Or, you know, like they don't care what
Die
the event
hard
is.
Olympics fans. Yes.
I've never met someone in my life about that.
I haven't either. I'm sure that they're out there though.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna sidetrack on it real because this is an age old question that I have spent my entire life arguing with people about.
Uh-huh.
Medal counts, Molly. Medal counts.
Mm.
What is more important? The overall medal count or just gold medals? Like, so, like at the end, they'll be like, oh, team so-and-so had 67 medals overall. They had the most medals, but like they only had like 3 gold.
Gold medals.
So like if you had to claim a winner, see, in my opinion, it's all about the gold medals.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Like, I don't care if you had 20 silver medals and 3 gold medals. You didn't win. You only won three gold events. Right,
yeah.
You only won 3 events.
Yeah.
Like, it's impressive. Like, if
it's
your country
yeah.
is ranking in the top 3 consistently, like, that's good.
Sure, but no, I agree. I think we should look at, gold medals.
But
who's
that's
the winner?
Yeah, that's who won.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, do you ever watch Archer?
Yeah.
I got 3rd in the world. You lost, Ray. Get over it. It was actually a huge disappointment. Got 3rd in the world.
In the world.
You lost, right? So good.
It is very much like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so glad we're on the same page. Initial successor, Total Failure. Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery today and try a staff favorite that's back on tap, the 6.6% 80 IBU Crossfire Citra IPA. If you're a sociopath who likes those... just insulting IPA drinkers on here. This light-bodied beer is an easy-to-drink IPA with a crisp citrus flavor and aroma. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursdays, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders from North Idaho Cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho. No, IPA drinkers, you're fine. That's okay.
I know. We're making people who love the Olympics mad. We're making people who love IPAs.
There's somebody that's like drinking an IPA watching the Olympics right now.
Like, oh my God, like, you guys.
Screw this
what
show.
What did I do to you?
We have just completely cleaved our IPA Olympic crowd.
I'm so sorry.
We've lost all 3 of those listeners.
Come back to us, please. We'll make it up to you.
I promise. I love the medal ceremony. You know,
all medals.
The Jamaican bobsled team, like they're my favorite. It really brings out the best in people. And while I'm watching it, I always love sitting back with a stiff drink that
nice
tastes like copper
IPA.
Pennies. It's so good.
A
yeah.
Nice hoppy IPA.
So good. I like to dip hops into my IPA. That's how much I love them.
Do a little French press. Yeah. Get some more hops into it.
Oh, I can taste it right now. It's in my mouth. Okay, moming on. Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines for Wednesday, February 16th. About 150 people attend a public meeting. Council okays comp plan. This is by Bill Bewley. Following more than 3 hours of public testimony and fierce arguments on both sides, the Coeur d'Alene City Council on Tuesday voted 4-1 to approve the 2022-2042 comprehensive plan. 2042. That sounds not real. Quote, at some point you have to make a decision and you will have to move on, said Councilwoman Christine Wood, who said the plan, which will cost $245,000, was well done. Councilman Woody McEvers said the plan would not have any immediate direct impact. Quote, the change is evolutionary. It's down the road, he said. Councilman Dan Gookin at one point made a motion to delay a decision to get more public input, then retracted it when it wasn't clear if a second was needed on his motion and how that input would be received. He voted no. He said the plan doesn't do enough to protect downtown. He called it, quote, fuzzy, and said it was subject to change for future developments. He pointed out the county's comprehensive plan was about 15 pages, the city's more than 100. Quote, to say this was vetted, it wasn't vetted by me, he said. Gookin said an outside independent agency that is not accountable to the citizens or open meeting laws should not be setting city policy. That's our job, he said. The meeting was attended by about 150 people, and about 40 spoke in the library community room. For the most part, the crowd was respectful and quiet, but Mayor Jim Hammond twice threatened to have people removed if they didn't stop interrupting. There were 8 police officers present. The Planning Commission voted 5-0 to approve the plan last week, despite strong objections from about 25 people. The plan, referred to as, quote, Envision Coeur d'Alene, has been a collaboration between the City of Coeur d'Alene and CDA 2030 to shape growth and identify priorities for the future of Coeur d'Alene, according to the city website. The City Planning Commission, city staff, CDA 2030, consultants at MIG volunteers, and the public, quote, have worked diligently to prepare this new comprehensive plan and identify priority action items based on community feedback, according to a statement on the city website. The public engagement effort included a kickoff event that attracted more than 80 people, stakeholder discussions, game nights, visioning exercises, surveys, mapping scenarios, and volunteers serving on the Community Advisory Committee, and 6 focus groups that have met more than 20 times. The process involved more than 60 community service groups, more than 1,400 people, and more than 11,000 data points. Many spoke against the plan, and many spoke for it. Some said they knew nothing of it, were given just two weeks to comment on finished product, and that was a one-sided process to promote growth. They said it encouraged high-density housing, high-rises, and even more congested roadways and transit that would result in crime, gangs, and homelessness. Others said they moved here for the city's quality of life, small-town atmosphere, and friendly ways. They feared that would be lost. Julie Lind was critical of the council, the public hearing, and the process to improve the plan. She said it seemed no matter how many people spoke in opposition, the council would approve it. Quote, it's like a formality we're going through, she said. It's really disheartening to me to see that. Catherine Bedford of Coeur d'Alene says she used to live in San Diego. She said almost every piece of land there has been developed for housing, and she didn't want that to happen to Coeur d'Alene. Quote, I don't think proposed growth is a good thing, she said. She said many have told her they are moving to Coeur d'Alene. Quote, we have to think about what we are planning. Do we want to be California, she said. Proponents said it didn't change zoning laws or existing neighborhoods, and a goal was to create live, work, and play areas. They said there had to be allowances to try and provide low-income housing, which meant high-density areas. Mary Nail, said the secret was out. Coeur d'Alene was a great place to live. Their plan could help absorb those headed this way. Quote, it's crucial to provide an opportunity for a variety of housing projects, said Nail, who grew up in Coeur d'Alene. Jennifer Drake said she comes from a family that has 5 generations in Coeur d'Alene. Growth and change has been going on for more than a century, she said. Drake said newcomers opposed to the plan lacked context. Quote, this is a plan for the future that we know is coming but cannot see, she said. Mayor Hammond said there is a misperception. The council didn't care about high density and didn't care about preserving neighborhoods. Quote, we love this city also, he said. We don't want it to become something different than what it is. Oh boy. Okay, so what I'm getting from this is there's a lot of people that are outspoken. Mm-hmm. You know, how these things work, a lot of people show up who are just more concerned about growth.
Right, which is understandable.
Sure, they're not necessarily didn't read the whole document, probably mm-hmm. not. But it is understandable. It's human nature. You like something that you have and you don't want it to change.
You don't want it to change. That is human nature.
Totally understand. That being said, I understand.
It is going to change.
It is going to change.
It's going to grow and it's going to change. We can't necessarily stop that.
Correct. It's that catch-22 I've talked on the show before of like, on one side of me, you know, we're both from here. Mm-hmm. There's that side of me that doesn't want things to change and liked, you know, the secret's out. Mm-hmm. Things were pretty great here.
Right.
And it sucks that you don't, there's that fear that things could change. Mm-hmm. On the same time, like if people keep coming up here and we don't like make any changes to accommodate that.
Right.
Or at least guide it in some way, then you're going to get, you know, one bedroom apartments that are going for $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
Because the need is outweighing the supply.
Exactly.
And so I don't know. I'm not saying that you just, you know, open the door and let it grow unhindered.
No.
But at the same time,
there's I think
just,
having
what
a
can
plan
you do to
smart.
Stop growth?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Moving on to Thursday, February 17th. Won't You Be My Neighbor? This is by Bill Bewley.
Won't You Be
My Neighbor.
Ugh.
Project Neighborly Workshop full of positive vibes and good ideas. About 35 people came together for nearly 2 hours to share thoughts, ideas, and hopes about making their community even better, more welcoming, more open. And they could receive grant funds to make these things happen. CDA 2030, the Idaho Community Foundation, and other community partners are launching an effort to foster civility and neighborliness in local communities throughout North Idaho.
Those aren't things. I don't. Those don't happen.
Civility and neighborliness.
No, that died 20 years ago. We don't have that anymore.
It seemed to be working Wednesday. Attendees often smiled, laughed, and praised each other's pitches. It was a light, festive atmosphere of positive vibes, almost like old friends. And no one brought up politics. Project Neighborly and ICF will ignite efforts by awarding grants up to $5,000 to support inspiring, actionable, relevant projects and activities that develop a sense of community and promote neighborliness in Benoit, Bonner, Boundary, Kootenai, and Shoshone counties. ICF has $45,000 for this round of grants. The deadline to apply is April 8th. A pilot project in Ada and Canyon counties last year attracted more than 50 grant applications, and several were funded. The whole purpose of this is to inspire kindness and neighborliness, said Karen Nielsen, ICF Vice President, Philanthropy and Impact, who led the High Energy Workshop. Art Elliott of Hayden said it won't be easy. We have some major challenges in our area that go against neighborliness, he said, but he liked what he heard. Others spoke of shared community gardens and integrating artwork by kids to beautify walkways. Sarah Mann said she moved here 20 years ago from San Diego with her mom. Many told them of local churches and restaurants to try. We just felt really supported, she said. Mann suggested that instead of welcome baskets, they could throw parties with food and music to greet and educate new arrivals in a friendly, loving way. It would be a time they could hear about volunteer opportunities with nonprofits to establish roots. It would be just kind of this spiderweb of support, Mann said. Dave Pfeiffer attended with his wife, Lindy. He said he came here as a kid in the 1970s, has owned property here since the 1990s, and still has people tell him, "You're not from here." He would like to see a project that would promote being of here. I don't care if you moved here yesterday, he said. If you're of here, you're my neighbor. City Attorney Mike Gridley said one of the things that makes Coeur d'Alene special is that there are folks like all of you that care about it. They may have different interests and beliefs, he said, but there is this overlapping common ground that we all have.
Oh, well, that's heartwarming.
It is.
I feel like that was an episode of Mr. Rogers
mm-hmm.
right there.
Won't you be my neighbor?
Won't you be my neighbor? Some people don't want them to be neighbors.
Some people don't. But, you know, I do agree with, like, yeah, again, like we talked about, things are going to change. People are going to move here. And wouldn't it be better mm-hmm. if we were friendly to them, if we were welcoming to them, and then they felt, and then they can grow, we can grow as a community instead of becoming so divisive and you're from here, you're from here, you're from here, you're from here.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I understand because...
I look at it this way. Like, you come... If you go to a certain place, mm-hmm. it's I always follow the rule of when in Rome, do as the Romans
yes.
do.
Yes.
And like, if I go to court, California, I know that mindset. I know what I'm prepared for. And my life is going to change
a little
bit.
It's going to be different than your life in Idaho. That's true.
It's going to be a little bit different. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's all about, I mean, there's no right or wrong way. It's just in an area where we've agreed upon to do it this one way or another, you come up here and it makes sense that you came up here for that reason.
Yeah.
And I think if we all can just get behind that idea of like, we all agree to do like be neighborly.
Yeah, right.
In one way, or you know, keep that small town mentality,
exactly.
Or whatever that may be, mm-hmm. I think that that's fine.
Yeah,
and I think that that's how it, and I think that's how it should be.
I agree. Yeah, yeah.
And that way we could all, you know, it's. I think that that's probably one of the biggest things that I've heard. We even had that quote in the last story was like, folks that are from here and not, mm-hmm. they're afraid of the area becoming different.
Yes.
Specifically California in this example, yes. But like they're afraid of the area changing into something that it's not.
That it's not.
Because the reason people are coming here is because of how it is now.
Yes.
And it could, and that, and there's that fear that it could change.
That it could change.
So I understand that.
I definitely
I do
understand
get that. But this kind of thing, like, you know, getting everybody together and you know, getting them agreeing on things that we could all get behind.
Mm-hmm.
I call them the Miss America points.
Mm, yeah.
Like, we need to end world hunger.
Right.
Like, yes.
Yes.
Okay. We can
yes.
all.
Uh-huh. We can all agree.
Yes, we can. And it's one of my jokes is like, one of those is like, we hate the Californians. And even the Californians who have moved up here, they're like, yeah, we hate the Californians.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we hate those Californians.
But it's just a point of unity. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes the best points of unity are hate.
Are
so.
Hate. That's very true.
Oh, we have so much positivity on the show today. It's so good. I love it. Speaking of positivity, Post Falls Police Chief offers crime insights. This is by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. Police Chief Greg McLean handcuffed some fake news this week. The number of times I've been called fake news. After city council members received an email from a concerned citizen about an alleged spike in crime in the city, McLean felt compelled to set the record straight. The email suggested a correlation between the city's increase in population and a, quote, huge increase in crime, he said. McLean looked at the years 2019 through 2022 at a Tuesday night's council meeting. He highlighted crime categories that he said are of interest to most people. Population rates have grown steadily. In 2019, there was about 33,000 people. In 2020, it grew by 16% to 38,500. In 2021, it increased 2.5% to about 39,452. Man. And now, 2 months into 2022, the population is about 42,000, a further increase of 6.4%. That's ridiculous. The city had 280 assault cases in 2019, he said, with a spike in 2020 to 321 cases. However, the number went down to 301 in 2021. Quote, we started to see COVID impact coming into these crime rates, McLean said. That totally makes sense. Quote, so you had people who were debating about between masks and no masks. People were angry and trying to get into some confrontations in certain areas. Oh boy. In 2019, there were 56 burglary cases, which jumped to 94 in 2020. Again, 2021 saw a reduction to 75 cases. Many of the crimes were committed on construction sites, McLean said. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think of like a Hey Arnold situation where somebody chains himself to a tree or something.
Right.
Uh-huh. Well, quote, they were breaking into trailers and stealing equipment, he said. It's starting to calm down a little bit, but not much. Rates of larceny or theft of personal property across 3 years show that 2021 had the highest rate with 530 cases. 2019 saw 488 cases and 2020 had 448. Quote, again, in 2021, you've got all these construction sites where they're leaving their saws out, McLean said. We were seeing a huge rash of that at that particular time. Vehicle theft cases in 2019 were 36. 2020 had the highest rates with 48 cases. 2021 saw a decrease to 21 cases. Arrest rates for misdemeanor crimes in 2019 were the highest with 522 cases. 2020 saw a decrease to 267, and in 2021, the number was up to 376 cases. Quote, Where we saw some adjustment in 2020 and 2021, McLean said, we had a law change. That change prohibited us from making an arrest on a misdemeanor if it didn't happen in our presence, where before we could, under certain categories like domestic violence. I wrote a story about that previously. Mm-hmm. COVID affected misdemeanor arrest rates as well. The Kootenai County Sheriff's Office had requested Post Falls police make more citations, followed by releases of the suspect, McLean said. That had a lot to do with COVID.
Yeah.
Felony arrests across 3 years actually decreased slightly. 2019 saw 284 arrests, 2020 had 244, and 2021 had 234 felony arrests. Rates of driving under the influence were the highest in 2019 with 240 cases. 2020 saw a significant drop to 160, as people not driving as much.
Yep.
DUIs were up slightly in 2021 with 185 cases. McLean said that during the height of the COVID pandemic, more people were staying home to drink. That's understandable. When the bar's not open.
Yeah, you're going to get what you can get.
Literally at one point, the only thing open is liquor stores and grocery stores.
Yep.
It makes sense. You can't turn the grocery store into a bar. What's that joke? Sir, I'd love to inquire about what's the rent price in this lovely apartment? Sir, this is the liquor store. When looking at calls for service, McLean included statistics from 2022 to bring the most current perspective to the data. McLean looked at the same time frame for each year between 2019 and 2020 from January 1st through February 14th. Service call rates to the police department show a fairly steady level of crimes committed despite the population increase. By February 14th, 2019, the department had received 3,859 calls. That time frame for 2020 saw 4,134 calls, and in 2021, it was 3,786. So far in 2022, the department has received 3,902. Total service calls for 2019 were 34,475. In 2020, the department fielded 33,913 calls, and 2021 saw 36,742. McLean shed some light on violent crimes as well. Quote, over the last couple of months, we've been getting hit pretty heavy when it comes to violent crime, he said. We were just talking about that on the show recently. People going nuts. Mm-hmm. He said, contrary to some opinions, however, the suspects are longtime local residents, not newcomers, McLean said. This month, an attempted murder-suicide occurred on the 100 block of West 16th Avenue. One man was pronounced dead at the scene. The suspect in the case had been a Coeur d'Alene resident since 2006. Also this month, during a forced entry home invasion, suspect Francis Gunser allegedly shot a man and a woman. The man was pronounced dead at the scene. Post Falls police believe the suspect knew the victims. Gunser had been a Coeur d'Alene resident since 2002. Quote, most of these violent crimes are really occurring with locals right now, McLean said, not seeing out-of-state stuff that's bringing the spike in crime forward. Well, that's an easy explanation. The staters are driving us insane. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
If these out-of-state people wouldn't come in,
I wouldn't be so angry, and I wouldn't have to commit
so
violent crimes.
If the Olympics weren't happening.
Man, the Olympics just got me heated, you know?
If people stopped drinking IPAs, maybe I'd calm down a little bit.
That's right. Just doubling down. If any of those listeners stayed... Now they're definitely gone. Now
they're definitely gone. They're like, gosh dang it, I thought we were done. This will be
our highest listen to episode, followed by our lowest listen to episode.
Oh, no.
Okay, so getting serious for a second. This story, so I've written about law enforcement statistics a lot. One of my most consistent stories that I write every year is the ISP Crime in Idaho report, and I take kind of a local look at the areas and the departments and that kind of thing. One of the things that needs to be looked at when you're looking at law enforcement statistics, this is the stuff that's reported. Like, these are the things that are responded to.
Okay.
So, like, whether that necessarily means that things are being reported as much or are, you know, arrests are being made. Mm-hmm. So, for example, like, when you say you had 234 felony arrests, that doesn't you can't necessarily say, like, from year to year, we had more felony crime. It's just we had more arrests than the previous. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
So, and there's – because there's a lot of factors that go into something like that.
Right.
As a Post Falls native, I mean, when I was a kid, the Post Falls police station was in the small little building in front of what is currently City Hall.
Okay, yeah.
In downtown Post Falls. Like, so you can see how we've gone from – like, that building might be – I mean, it's a shoebox.
Right.
Like, it's no bigger than a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
It's tiny. And for those who are unfamiliar with this, it's the small brick building that sits in Post Falls that is now currently a museum, I believe.
Okay.
But it used to be the Post Falls Police Station. And now, I mean, the Post Falls Police Department is massive. Like, it's a full-on operation.
Exactly, yeah.
That's built into the middle of the city. So, I mean, obviously, we've had to keep up with something, you know, in terms of population.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the local, you know, with more people comes more crime. That might be accurate to a degree.
Right.
With just, you know, increases the odds.
Yeah.
But, you know, people coming up from a certain area don't necessarily mean that there's going to be more or less crime.
Exactly.
It's more of just like you're just what's that old saying with like group projects? The more people you get involved, the more chances that someone's going to mess it
yep.
up.
Exactly.
So like there is some logic to that. I get that side
of
it.
I get that too. Yeah.
But at the same time, like that doesn't necessarily correlate. And,
no.
And he's right. The chief is right in the sense that there are certain things that are factors. The misdemeanor law is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
COVID definitely saw, you'd think that would make people really angry and tense up.
Right.
I think there was a statistic I saw a while ago that while, you know, crime went down, suicides went up.
Yeah.
Understandable. Mm-hmm. Again, certain
people alone in their homes.
Yep. Long periods of time,
yep.
No social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that as well. I get that. But it's hard not to see just from somebody, you know, the eye test, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, I mean, when you see more law enforcement presence in an area, the natural thought is to go, oh, crime must be up.
Right. When that isn't necessarily.
Not necessarily one way or the other.
Yeah.
So it could just mean, I mean, coming from a funding perspective, Post Falls is one of the more well-funded
yeah.
police departments in North Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a job perspective. And it's funny, we're going to get to that here in a second with talking about the jail.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it happens all the time. Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene PD can pay better than, say,
sure.
the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office or the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office or the
yeah.
Bonner County Sheriff's Office. So they go to these small PDs and they have not only good pay, but good benefits.
That makes
so,
sense.
So
yeah.
There's a lot of factors at play at that.
Right. Yeah.
So speaking of, let's move to Friday, February 18th.
Jail could use more good men and women by Bill Bewley.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Schauer has Colin Schauer
yeah.
has been a Kootenai County Sheriff's Office detention deputy for nearly 4 years. He knows why. I know it sounds a little corny, but I wanted to do something that helps the community, something that you can hang your hat on and tell your friends, he said. It's turned out mostly as expected. He likes his job at the Kootenai County Jail and believes that he is making a difference. He speaks highly of his colleagues. That's what keeps me going every day. I work with literally some of the best people I've ever met in my life, he said. Then there are the challenges of being a detention deputy, monitoring hundreds of inmates in jail for a range of misdemeanors and felonies. Thursday's KCSO booking summary report showed people arrested for driving under the influence, possession of marijuana, malicious injury to property, breakup fights, burglary, and first-degree attempted murder. On any given day, that can mean deputies check on them, take care of paperwork for intakes and release, be sure they get lunch, exchange linens and have transportation to and from the court, or make a phone call to a lawyer. Essentially, it's the equivalent of a patrol officer on the street, but in the jail, said Lieutenant Kyle Hutchison. Some in jail are not the nicest people. Schauer, who stands an imposing 6'5", has been spit on, and not long ago an inmate tried to punch him. He shrugs it off as something that comes. You see people in shapes and conditions that no one else sees, Schauer said. We deal with stuff that people only see in movies and stuff that you can't even think up. But being a detention deputy has had its good days.
I mean, that is definitely you got to have a certain mental state to do that job.
Oof, you definitely do.
Bill broke this story into sections.
Okay.
So this, in part, he's going into in need of more now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So in need of more, the KCSO could use a few more people like Schauer. It has 11 vacancies. It has 11 new hires in training, so it's really down 22. A typical day shift would see two sergeants and 12 deputies on duty. We can't maintain those numbers because we just don't have enough people to run the four main shifts, Hutchison said. That puts stress on the jail, which is certified to hold 451 inmates and has 410. The result is a lot of overtime. 40 to 60 hours in 2 weeks isn't uncommon, and high turnover as some look to move on to patrol deputies. We've been this short before in the past, and then we've been able to catch up. But then we always seem to slip back, Hutchison said. KCSO wants to change that. It's making a push to attract new detention deputies and build towards a staff of 82. It is hoping to highlight pay that starts at $20.71 an hour, with raises in year one, great benefits, and a solid career path. It has scheduled 2 open houses for interested applicants to see the inside of the Kootenai County Jail. The first is 5 to 7 p.m. on March 16th, and the second is 9 to 11 a.m. on March 26th. Hutchison hopes that they can attract people who are curious, show them the facility, and give them a look at the life of a detention deputy. Quote, we believe that once people see what a jail really looks like, not what they see on TV, they'll realize that it's a place that they would want to work, Hutchison said. He said that they hire people from age 18 to those who are perhaps older, retired from one job, or looking for a second career. Retired military has been a good market for KCSO. The process involves a background check. Hutchison said that the day-to-day of the job is not physically demanding, quote, but the potential of a fight or wrestling with an inmate does exist, so you do have to maintain physical fitness and then also pass an entry-level physical fitness test, end quote.
So this story goes on a little bit more. There's a couple sections on Bill actually spoke with one of the inmates and got his perspective on things. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting read. I would go in and check out this story if you're interested on what's going on at the Kootenai County Jail. Something tells me that this might help a little bit, but this has been a problem. This has been a problem for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just Kootenai County. It's all over. Right. It's all over the area. I know, you know, from experience, Shoshone has had issues with staffing, mm-hmm. Bonner County, that kind of thing. So it's. I mean, hopefully, $20 is not. That's not bad.
No,
it's not bad pay. I think, unfortunately, with rising costs around here, that's really just more of a cost of living mm-hmm. adjustment. But at the same time, that's not bad. To deal with that kind of stuff.
Right.
So not too bad. And as somebody who knows some friends who work in that in the jails, it's not a job for the faint of heart.
No.
So it definitely, between the pay and what you got to deal with, it mm-hmm. takes a certain person. Definitely does. All right, let's move to Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, February 18th. Molly, this is a special edition that you and Josh primarily put together. We're talking a guy here that had a major influence on the Silver Valley, specifically in Mullen,
mm-hmm.
and talking about football. So our headline story for this very special edition that looks very cool in print, by the way, very, very purpley.
Yes.
It's headlined Honoring a Winner. This was written by Josh McDonald, and it was written kind of from his perspective. So I'll read a little bit, and we'll go from there. Quote, if it didn't matter, then there wouldn't be a scoreboard. I love that quote so much.
That is a good quote.
I love that quote so much. It is so. The score is what makes it a game.
The gold medals are what makes you a winner. That's right, bringing it back.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Coach.
Just making sure, like, they tune back, they're like, all right, I'll give them another chance. And they just pop four, and we just keep hammering them. So this is from Josh's perspective. I have spent 30 years in the Silver Valley, and somehow with all the high school athletics that I have covered or participated in, I have never had the opportunity to meet the man known by many simply as Coach. John Drager is among the more legendary figures in the Silver Valley and North Idaho sports history, and truthfully, I'm not sure that you'd find a city in the panhandle who doesn't have at least a handful of people who have some sort of colorful story about Mullen's iconic coach. Drager is truly one of the few men who can be claimed in as one of one form or fashion by the entire Silver Valley, as high school students he attended Kellogg and Wallace High Schools before attending college at both the University of Idaho and North Idaho College, including time as a Vandal football player and a Cardinal Hooper. Wow, that's incredible. It was in 1963, however, that he began his journey to become Mullen's favorite adopted son. Norm Walker, the longtime football and basketball coach at Mullen High School, asked if Drager would be interested in taking a position as an assistant coach with him, or under him. No one could have expected that by saying yes to Walker's request, Drager included, that a foundation of excellence was being laid for the students and athletes in Mullen for decades to come. Quote, I had the opportunity to work with John Drager for 20-some years, said Don Kochevar. He was probably one of the best educators that I ever worked with. He didn't teach about books. He taught about life. He was simply amazing. As a competitor, Drager hated losing and relished winning in ways that can only be described by looking at the careers of the likes of Jordan and Brady or even Jackson and Belichick. Lightning struck first in 1965 when, as an assistant to Walker, the Mullen Tigers captured the 4A state basketball championship, A4 rather. It would be the first championship that he was a part of, but it would far from the last, as he would spend the next 32 years as the head football coach, 28 of them also as the head basketball coach following Walker's departure to coach at Wallace. During those 32 years, he amassed an incredible 229-51 record coaching football and a 467-205 record in basketball. That's pretty impressive.
It is.
The accolades begin to really stack up when you break down the years. 14 league championships each in basketball and football, 5 undefeated seasons on the gridiron, including 2 recognized state championships in 1983 and 1984, back-to-backs, as well as 2 unofficial state championships where Mullen finished atop the state rankings at the end of the year in 1974 and 1975. Drager also coached Mullen's track team for a time where he, you guessed it, was a winner. It's estimated that in his time as a coach and at any level, he won more than 1,000 games for Mullen. Drager even coached against his own children who attended Wallace, but when they began to steal some wins from their old man, Coach quickly brought them to Mullen to win games for him. When Drager retired in 1996, it was almost a shock to the system for the collective North Idaho sports world. The region's fiercest competitor had rode off into the sunset on his own terms with a Hall of Fame resume that would never be second-guessed. That resume would be honored 7 years later when he was inducted into the North Idaho Athletic Hall of Fame in 2003. Super cool. Quote, John was so respected by so many throughout North Idaho, you could not walk into a store or restaurant anywhere without somebody not knowing John Drager, Kochevar said. Even with a competitive edge that was unmatched, numerous former players and students will tell you about his softer side, his sense of humor, and his willingness to make sure that no student ever went without. Quote, a kid never went without when it came to Drager, Kochevar said. If someone didn't have all the equipment they needed, then he'd find a way. Either he'd find it for them or give them an opportunity to come and work for some money in order to purchase what they needed. It didn't matter if they came from the wrong side of the fence. He was the finest man I ever had the opportunity to work with. Wow, that's high praise from the former Mullen mayor. Kochevar, who was formerly both Mullen's mayor and high school principal, acknowledges that Drager's influence on his life likely shaped him in ways that he's still discovering today. Kochevar spent several years in different coaching capacities himself and said that one quote from Drager stuck in his mind more than others. Quote, they put a scoreboard in the gym or on the field for one goddamn reason, and that is to win. If it didn't matter, then there wouldn't be a scoreboard. Oh, I love it so much.
Can they have that in a quote, like on the scoreboard?
Yes, I want it on the scoreboard. Like, this is here for a reason.
That is amazing.
We don't give out participation trophies in Mullen. That's not a thing. Man, I love it. That should be on a plaque and a t-shirt and I would make that like I would put that on the Welcome to Mullen
sign. Right, yes.
Welcome to Mullen. There's a reason there was a scoreboard. I love that so much. Okay. So an incredible man is being paid tribute to in this edition. Molly, you worked up your own story.
Yes, I did. So this was by me, Molly Roberts. The Biggest Shoes. Legendary Mullen coach John Drager won more than 1,000 games, coached 5 undefeated football teams, was awarded Idaho Coach of the Year in 1983 to 1984, and North Idaho Coach of the Year in 1983. For decades, he was the Mullen athletic director, teacher, bus driver, head basketball, and football coach. What does it feel like to follow in the footsteps of someone as celebrated as Drager? Stetson Spooner, Mullen Junior Senior High School Activities Director, head football coach, as well as health and PE teacher, can answer that question. At times it has been intimidating to a degree. At the same time, it fills a coach with pride and drive to always strive to match that type of dominance and greatness, Spooner said. A multitude of coaches followed after Drager's retirement. Guys like Bruce Bailey, Brian Arthen, Norbert Lane, and Corey Miller are just a few of the names that stick out. But all of them had one thing in common. They had the utmost respect for Coach Drager. The way Coach is talked about and revered in our communities is sort of that level that all coaches want to reach, Spooner said. A legacy that lives on forever, on and off the fields and courts. It can be difficult not to feel the intense pressure of following in the footsteps of someone as renowned as Drager. The pressure felt was never amplified by Drager, who instead offered wisdom and kind words to those who followed him. Quote, the greatest thing about Coach was the pressure never came from him or anything he ever said. He is always supportive and encouraging, Spooner said with a smile. The pressure felt by his greatness is only there because of his accolades and many successes. Personally, it was a bond created over similar work ethics and the timing that only comes from being an early riser. Quote, my relationship with Coach is a subtle and refreshing one. Meeting and talking with him during his post-coaching career over these last 11 years, I have seen a very laid-back, helpful, and seemingly grateful man, Spooner recalled. His willingness to chat, share stories, and coaching tips was always on tap. Even at 5 to 6 a.m. in the locker room, when I was showing up for work and he was leaving from his morning swim. Spooner looks back fondly on the conversations with Drager and the anecdotes he shared with him. Quote, numerous practice structure and defensive scheme ideas in the early years of being here came from him, he remembered. But honestly, our talks, when I was lucky enough to bump into him, turned more into hearing stories where I would sit like a diehard fan of a band at a concert. We would also have great conversations about what was new in life and what's ahead in the future. Over the last few years, Spooner has been restoring the glory to the Mullen football program, including 3 trips to the state playoffs, several top 5 ranked finishes, and moving several of his athletes on to college. He looks at Drager as an example of how to do things the right way, and even has a tinge of jealousy for those who had the opportunity to play for Coach. Quote, I hope Coach knows that I have genuinely appreciated every talk we have ever had, Spooner said. How he is always so kind, supportive, and humble to me as I've tried to make this a better place than it was when I got here, just as he has. I would have loved to be coached by Drager at some point during my own football days.
Molly, that's such a good story. Good
job.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was very interesting to do, yeah. And I asked my dad if he knew, because he used to play basketball and football for the Kellogg School District. Okay. And so I asked him what he knew, and he didn't know much, but he did. He said everyone knew who John Drager was.
Sure.
He said, I didn't know him very well, but if you said that name, it was respected. It was, so yeah, it was really, really just a cool addition to do that I was able to be a part of, and just to learn a lot about this man that I didn't know a lot about. And yeah.
I'm going to formally petition on the podcast right now that if it didn't matter, then there wouldn't be a scoreboard.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be like the official like motto of every Mullen athletic program.
Yep.
That like it needs to be on t-shirts or
if it didn't matter, then there wouldn't be a scoreboard.
That's so good. All right, let's push north to the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines out of Sandpoint, starting with Wednesday, February 16th. County voting precincts change. This is by Anissa Keith. Commissioners unanimously approved the creation of a new polling precinct and the dissolution of 3 others, Lakeview, Cocalala, and Kelso precincts, at Tuesday's meeting. Quote, due to the results from the 2020 census, the Idaho Secretary of State has finalized and released redistricting boundaries in Bonner County for 2022 and beyond, said Clarissa Koster of the Elections Office on Tuesday. Legislative 7 is being dissolved, with those voters being moved into Legislative District 1 for the most part. Koster said three precincts were created to accommodate the existence of District 7 in the county. Statewide legislative maps were redrawn last year, removing District 7 from the county, meaning local precinct boundaries will also have to adjust. Yeah, we're going to have a follow-up in Shoshone on this as well. Polling places for voters in the former Lakeview and Kokalala precincts will stay the same, even though their precinct is changing. Quote, Lakeview, Kelso, and Kokalala precincts were only created to accommodate legislative District 7, Koster said. The voters from Lakeview precinct will be moved into the Clark Fork precinct. The Kokalala precinct will be moved into the Southside precinct. All besides 25 voters in the Kelso precinct will keep their current polling place at the Kerrywood Fire Station. The other 25 voters will now vote in the Southside precinct, located at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Westman Ward. State redistricting caused a split in the Edgemere precinct in southern Bonner County. A new precinct will be created to resolve that split. All affected voters will keep their current polling place. Quote, the redistricting results have created a district that splits voters in the Edgemere precinct, Koster said. Those voters affected in the Edgemere precinct will be moved into the newly created Clagstone precinct and will continue to vote at the Edgemere Grange Hall. The changes were approved by the prosecutor's office before coming in front of the commission, which unanimously approved the changes. Those curious about where they can find their polling place can do so by calling the elections office at 208-255-3631 or by going to the elections office website. Go to bonnercountyid.gov, click on departments, then select elections. On that page, scroll down and select polling place locator. The updated precinct maps will be available March 1st. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're moving districts around, there's always going to be rhyme or reason for it. Even though there's gerrymandering's not a thing that never happens ever, but it does. Mm-hmm. And that's usually what it's for. So, I mean, I don't know enough about these voting districts to know if there's anything like that. But, I mean, it's important to vote. So you should make sure that you know where your polling place
is. Very true.
Moving on, Thursday, February 17th.
And this name is Anissa. Anissa Keith. Mm-hmm. In the court hands, county says can't be access up to the court. This is in Sandpoint. Commissioners will leave the question of whether or not there is public access to Lake Ponderay via Camp Bay Road to the courts. Wednesday's unanimous decision follows an almost year-long debate over whether there is illegal public access via the road. Discourse began on April 7th when county commissioners decided to vacate the final half-mile stretch of Camp Bay Road. The decision resulted in a lawsuit against the county and First District Court. A ruling in the case on November 15th determined that the commissioners would need to revisit their prior vacation decision because the board did not provide enough substantial evidence supporting their 2021 decision to transfer the last section of the road into private ownership. Quote, at this point, I can't make a decision either way until I find out what's going on with this lake access, whether it truly exists or not, Commission Chair Dan McDonald said in the final minutes of the meeting. Quote, my recommendation to move to deny because we haven't seen a determination yet on whether or not there is truly legal access. I think that needs to be adjudicated by a judge, not by us, end quote. The November 15th ruling also asked the commission to more closely examine if there was a conflict of interest involving then-director of the Road and Bridge Department, Steve Klatt. Klatt spoke at the meeting during public comment, informing the commission and the packed audience that he recused himself from any dealings involving the property owner, M3ID Camp Bay, LLC. According to Klatt's statements at Wednesday's meeting, he worked with private clients while he was employed as a director of the county's road and bridge department. Klatt stated that Green Enterprises was one of his clients at the time. However, Klatt maintained that he widely declared the conflict of interest to the commission and to the other department staff members beginning in October 2020. When M3 was under contract to purchase the land, I was first contacted about the idea of a locally funded improvement project, Klatt said. At that time, I declared, I have got a conflict of interest here. We will turn this project over to Matt Mulder, the county road engineer, and to Jason Topp. Topp is currently the director of the road and bridge department, but at the time he was a foreman for the district that includes Camp Bay. Topp also chose to speak during the meeting, sympathizing with public opinion. Quote, the paving of Camp Bay Road is a big deal in my book. On the professional side of it, I support the vacation, Topp said. On the personal side of it, I probably wouldn't, end quote. Many citizens have spoken at prior public meetings of how the road has history of providing public access to the lake. However, the property owners also attest that they have historic ties to the land. With three generations of Greens residing on the lakefront property, they maintain the road has always been private, but that previous generations allowed neighbors to use the road to get to the lake. Of the 47 public speakers, nearly all were opposed to the road vacation, including three members of the Green family. Quote, "This wasn't done in stupidity, so don't vacate the road in stupidity," Randy Green said. Representatives on behalf of M3 state there is no public access to the lake at Camp Bay and that there never has been. A majority of public commenters highlighted the importance of maintaining all public accesses to the lake, stating that there are few remaining choices for those who wish to access the lake legally. Wow.
So people getting real heated about it.
They are. Yeah, it's definitely interesting, you know, hearing about something that I have very limited idea.
Yeah, I don't know much. I don't know too much about it, but it sounds like a lot of people are. I have a lot of emotions about this.
This wasn't done in stupidity, so don't vacate the road in stupidity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, moving on. Restaurant sale marks end of an era. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. Quote, owner wants to retire. Make an offer. The sign has been taped to the window near the front door of Panhandler Pies for the past few months. After receiving no takers, Rex and Maria Williams turned the matter over to a real estate agent and went about their day. 8 hours later, they got a phone call. The agent had a buyer and wanted to close as soon as possible, Maria Williams said. The agent called investors to let them know the business was for sale and talked to several people. The listing never even made it onto the MLS, a listing site for real estate, Williams said. Quote, "I can't believe it happened that fast," she added. "We didn't expect that." The iconic downtown restaurant, long a staple for birthday celebrations and anniversaries, was renowned for big slabs of cornbread and a second serving of soup or chili. Its last day is Saturday. While the staff knew the couple hoped to retire soon and the couple had let it be known that they hoped to sell the restaurant so they could relax and enjoy their family, Williams said they were surprised over how quickly the business sold. Quote, "We thought we'd have more time," she told the Daily Bee. "We thought we'd have more time with the community." Knowing this housing market, it's probably going to be turned into apartments. "It's due to the community's support and trust over the years that Panhandler Pies was a success," Williams said. She said that she and her husband appreciate everyone always being there for them and trusting them with celebrations and family events. Quote, "We want to thank the community. Thanks, Sandpoint, for always being there for us," she added. "Tourist season is nice, but we never would have made it without the locals. We're going to miss them." Over the years, the couple said that they have seen two or in three generations of families come through the doors and made many friends during their 30-plus years in business. While the couple put the business up for sale in 2017, they hoped to find the perfect owner who would buy not only the building and location but keep Panhandler Pies going as a restaurant. The Williams has said that while they hate to say goodbye, the time has come for them to retire. They plan to remain in the Sandpoint area. It is, Williams said, home. Quote, "We love Sandpoint," she added. "There is no place for us but Sandpoint. It's home." The couple has invited the community to stop by and say hello and to have one last slice of pie. The restaurant is open regular hours and on Saturday to the hours will be 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. The buyer, whose name was not disclosed, purchased the land, building, and all the equipment. They did not purchase the Panhandler Pie's name or recipes, Williams said. The couple is open to selling rights to the name as well as the recipes. If anyone is interested, they can call Rex Williams at 208-627-2332. You could still technically buy it.
That's right.
In name,
get the
anyway.
Recipes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. Friday, February 18th.
All right. WBSD staff fills in gaps in staffing and education by Emily Bonsant.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. West Bonner School District staff have been pitching in to keep schools open and fill in the gaps when there are staff vacancies. At the February 16th WBSD board meeting, administrators presented their reports for the first quarter of the school year. Staff have been working double shifts and through their prep time to make up staff gaps, Superintendent Paul Anselmo said. Kim Shaner, the director of special education, said that the department has made ground in filling positions. They have added a full-time school counselor and filled two more positions at Idaho Hill Elementary. Progress is being made in social and emotional skills. Kids are learning rather than staff just putting out fires, she said. There is still a climbing increase of students with special needs. At Idaho Hill Elementary, in order to assist students who need extra help, an after-school club has been formed. 31 students are attending, and the club hopes to have more Susie Lucky, Idaho Hill principal said. Since the addition of the new counselor, Idaho Hill students have begun goal setting and finding ways to self-regulate. Some students have difficulties with tantrums, but now have found ways to help with intervention, Lucky said. Students are still getting used to being in school after not attending for years, which is very difficult at the elementary level. One example Lucky gave was third graders that have begun attending Idaho Hill. Quote, we have had a couple of kids come enroll in our school that haven't been in school since kindergarten, she said. We have these children, they don't know how to read, but you have third grade class going on, end quote. It takes a lot of work, but the staff is making steps to bridge these educational gaps. The first quarter of the school year, there were over 1,200 absences for the 160 students at Idaho Hill. Matt George, principal at Priest River Lamana High School, said there have been difficulties getting students to turn in their work, so the staff set a reward to incentivize students. If students turned in 75% of their work, they would have a trip to Triple Play. About half of the students met their goal and will be going on the trip. Well, this is happening in a lot of school districts.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
it is.
Lately, and even before the pandemic, there was difficulties getting staff, getting substitute teachers. And I think it's important, as someone who used to work in education, just to remember that these educators are working so hard. Exactly. Like they said, they're working through their prep time. They're staying late. I mean, yeah. Education's not easy. I'll say that. Oh, boy.
I get it. All right, moving on. Training mixes oil, ice to boost skills. This is by Anissa Keith. Bonner County's first responders are gaining expertise in winter search and rescue capabilities. Local first responders took part in a two-day training at Kokolala Lake, focusing on skill development for locating and handling hazardous spills in the winter months. The training was organized by BNSF Railway in partnership with Montana-based Whitewater Rescue Institute, which specializes in rescue training and inland oil spill response. Quote, it's for fire, EMS, police, whoever would respond to an accident, Bob Howard, Director of Emergency Services, said Thursday. Several years ago, we partnered with BNSF because they have rails throughout our county and have been very good at creating local partnerships if we have to respond to any kind of rail access. Orange cones and netting posed as obstacles on the icy surfaces of Kokolala Lake. Participants navigated the obstacles using an airboat in one of the three stations in the training. An airboat is a watercraft that does not have a motorized engine that hangs in the water. Instead, the craft is propelled by a large fan fixed to the back of the craft. Airboats! It's an Archer reference. Airboats can launch from a boat ramp in the winter months when bodies of water are covered by ice. The craft is owned by BNSF and was launched from City Beach in 2019 as part of a prior winter training exercise. In addition, first responders learned techniques used to pull living and non-living things from the ice in the event of a breakthrough. Members of Whitewater donned dry suits and volunteered to be pulled from the icy lake as part of the training. Training drills also provided first responders with education on how to effectively clean up contamination from an iced over body of water. According to an information from BNSF, 125,000 first responders have been equipped with safety training and education since 1996. Training is free to first responders and emergency personnel. Training emphasized techniques involved oil spills that are trapped below a layer of ice. In a cleanup operation like this, first responders will begin by cutting a large hole in the ice. Then the oil and other form of contamination will rise to the surface of the hole where it can be removed. Blocks of ice can function as a type of boom that guides the contaminants to the hole, aiding in cleanup effectiveness. It's a very specific, emergency issue, but it's good to know how to handle it if it happens.
Very true.
Yeah. All right, let's push even further north to the Bonner's Ferry Herald.
All right, BFPD gets approved new tasers by Emily Bonsant. Bonner's Ferry City Council approves the purchase of updated Taser 7 for the Bonner's Ferry Police Department for $16,610. BFPD Chief Brian Zimmerman told the council at the February 16th meeting that when the department attempted to schedule a recertification for the officers to use the Taser, they learned that they could not currently train and recertify on the X26 model. This is due to the models being 20 years old. Quote, this caught us off guard. We scheduled the training for recertification, but they don't recertify on these older units. So we just don't have a choice. And there's only one manufacturer and no competition, Zimmerman said. There are 6 Taser 7 in the order. Currently, the BFPD has 2 that are 3 years old. One will be used as a spare, and Zimmerman will use the other one. The equipment still works, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals have made it very clear that the department is required to have these tools at its disposal for the use of force continuum, he said. The updated Taser 7, and the quote from the manufacturer Axon Enterprise, Inc., is $16,610 for a package of 6, including holsters, charging bank, and cartridges for training. The council approved the purchase for the equipment in a 4-0 vote. Councilwoman Valeria Thompson said that in the future there should be a rolling plan to replace these tasers, so there is not such a large order at one time. Quote, of course we have to replace those and want our officers safe, she said. Once the chargers are purchased, it will not need to be purchased again later and will lower the bill for replacing equipment, she said.
I mean, it's good to have tasers that work.
Very true.
I feel like that's kind of important.
You know? And to be trained on how to use them.
That's
and
very accurate.
Probably have a, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Model that's newer than 20 years old.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, probably. Technology has definitely advanced in 20 years.
It truly has.
Mm-hmm. Look, 20 years ago, that was 2002, so we were playing on, what, PS2s?
Right, yeah. I had
Nokia phones. Yep. Oh, man. Okay. Volley for a Cure funds given to cancer support group. This is by Cynthia Bonsant. Bonner's Ferry High School varsity volleyball seniors captain Sarah Petich and Lexi Mass recently presented the Bonner's Ferry Women's Cancer and Support Group with a donation check for $3,170. The amount included proceeds raised from the silent auction during the, quote, Volley for a Cure game at the high school, the Volley for a Cure game at the middle school, and gate entry fees for the games in October of 2021. The cancer support group helps pay for medical needs and gas cards for women undergoing treatment in Boundary County. Virginia Sanborn, treasurer, received the check on behalf of the group. Quote, we really appreciated the money because we used it to purchase gas cards that we give the Boundary County cancer patients for travel to their treatment, Sanborn said. The group has been doing this for about 20 years, and such support helps the program continue, she said. For more information about Bonner's Ferry Women's Cancer and Support Group, contact Virginia Sanborn 208-267-2711. That's good.
Right. That is good.
Just a happy thing.
Now moving on to another fentanyl bust.
That's literally what it's headlined. It's another fentanyl bust.
By Emily Bonsant. A local man was found climbing a second-story railing to an apartment in order to claim fentanyl pills. Jeremy M. Gross, 33, of Bonner's Ferry, is being charged with possession of fentanyl, a felony and a misdemeanor of drug paraphernalia. Gross was seen climbing into the second story of his girlfriend's apartment by her brother, who had been at the apartment to clean it out of any possible drug connection in order to provide her no easy access to the controlled substance, said Bonner's Ferry Police Department Assistant Chief Marty Ryan in an affidavit. The brother told BFPD that he had been in the apartment when he heard someone try to come through the locked door. When the person left the door, the brother then went around the building. He told police that he recognized Gross climbing over the balcony rail of the second-story apartment and entered via the unsecured glass sliding door. Ryan and the BFPD chief, Brian Zimmerman, conducted a search of the apartment. They observed a male, quote, frantically moving around the bedroom as if either ransacking the room or attempting to hide or stash some unknown items, end quote. Ryan yelled out, identifying Gross by name. He then asked him to come to the living room. He complied, but Ryan, quote, immediately noted sweating profusely and that Gross's pupils constricted down to approximately 2 millimeters.
Did he pull out a ruler?
Right. I know. He's got a good approximation
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Ryan recognized the odor of smoked fentanyl pills.
A smell that probably isn't very pleasant.
No, I can't imagine that it is. When questioned, Gross said that his girlfriend and tenant of the apartment was at work, and that he's allowed to be at the home. He said that he entered through the second floor because he did not have a key. Looking into the back room, Ryan was, quote, overwhelmed by strong burning fentanyl pills. In plain sight, he observed burnt tinfoil and a torch for heating. Obviously, Gross had been smoking pills prior to our contact, Ryan said. Gross was read his rights, and then Ryan found on the bed in plain view 5 blue Mexi pills, or fentanyl, and a Tudor straw used to inhale heated fentanyl fumes. The witness directed BFPD to a snow pile where he threw a fentanyl pill. He said he had intended to get the pill out of the house when he found it on the floor, and then remembered the reported dangers of handling fentanyl and tossed it as a precaution. Gross was cuffed and transported to Boundary County Jail. En route, Gross told Ryan that he purchased 15 Mexi pills or fentanyl the day prior. Gross explained that he intended to share them with his girlfriend to help wean her off the pills. Gross told Ryan that he had smoked some of the pills just minutes to their arrival. He believed that there were no more pills in the home since he had dumped out a bag when he came in. BFPD only required 6 of the 15 pills. When Gross's girlfriend was asked about this, she said that it would be nothing for Gross to have smoked the other 9 within that time span. She told Ryan that they would smoke 10 pills at a time. Ryan confirmed that the fentanyl pills recovered were the same in design and markings as the other found in recent investigations. Small blue pills are known at the street levels as Mexi pills. Gross is scheduled for a preliminary hearing on February 25th, and if anyone in the community has any questions or information regarding this incident, contact the BFPD at 208-267-2412.
Stop doing drugs.
Stop doing fentanyl. Yeah, stop. I mean, oh my gosh.
Stop smoking pills.
Stop using something called a Tudor.
Yeah,
please.
If your recreational pastime involves something called a Tudor,
just maybe
you might want to reevaluate some things.
I agree. Yeah, unless I guess there's something like on a train, you know, a model train called a Tudor. Then okay, we are fine with people building model trains.
That was a very obscure poll right there, and I appreciate it. That's pretty good. Okay, on that happy note, once again, we'd like to thank Hecla Mining Company for sponsoring this episode. If you're interested in learning more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit them at heclamining.com. And Molly, that's it for today.
That's it. Thank you, guys.
Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeur d'Alene.com, ShoshoneNewsPress.com, BonnerCountyDailyBee.com, or TheBonnersFerryHerald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher or an app, please subscribe to us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And give us a like and follow on the North Idaho Now Facebook page so you can see all the fun things we put on there. Okay. Molly, that's it.
That is it.
Good episode. I liked it a lot. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.